We're on campus
and we're online.
University.
Radio. Nottingham.
Now, I am joined by Coral, Matt and Colin today for today's stories. We are going to start off with Brexit and then have some discussion about Michael Jackson and then plastic pollution. But we'll start off with you, Colin.
Oh, thank you. Brexit again. I don't need to tell anybody. It will be common knowledge now that following a vote last night, Parliament have decided in their earnest wisdom that we will not have a no-deal Brexit. Listening to the commentators, however, this doesn't seem to be the case. It seems that really the only way we guarantee there being a no-deal Brexit is to either accept Theresa May's the deal that's been put in front of us or to stop Brexit altogether. I don't know what you guys think.
She did say a while ago that there was going to be they would not have a no-deal Brexit, just Brexit would not happen before we got a no-deal one.
She also said no deal would be better than a bad deal.
I personally think there needs to be some sort... I do think that the call for a second referendum is a lot louder because of the fact that Parliament just can't get any sort of deal through. That's what it boils down to. The fact that they can't get through this impasse and trying to get... They can't even approve a no deal to go through or any sort of deal. That ultimately, a choice between some form of Brexit and not leaving the European Union should be put to the people, and that they should go with that. I think that's genuinely the easiest way to do it. And I know there's a lot of objections to second referendums, but I think I don't see how else you can fix the divisions.
See, I've said this before on the polls, that I think when people voted on the referendum, they didn't know what they were voting for. They just knew leave, and then... I mean, on both sides, there was a lot of lies going on, I will say. But they were voting for something that actually hasn't come about and hasn't happened. So I don't think another referendum will be... would be a bad thing or undemocratic, because actually I think what people were voting on 2-3 years ago was a very different idea to where we stand today.
I think an important point is that the most contentious issue has been the backstop about Northern Ireland. And this is an issue that wasn't discussed at all in the referendum campaign, if you remember. And so obviously it's become such an important part of Brexit now. And Nigel Farage actually said in an interview after Brexit happened when asked about Ireland, "I don't know, I haven't thought about it, but I don't think it matters that much." Which I think shows you how important the Brexiteers think the Irish issue is. And it just shows the fact that there's a lack of understanding of Brexit from the side of the Brexiteers, in my opinion.
I think, as someone that did a law degree, and there'll be lots of students within the university that are doing law degrees, European Union law is a mandatory module in all law degrees. And so I've studied it for a year, and I don't like the rhetoric that we're saying that people didn't know what they were voting for. That kind of suggests that people are stupid. And
I think some did, some didn't.
I don't think we're saying that people are stupid. I think it's more so we're saying that the Leave campaign didn't set out a clear way of how...
It was the campaigns, not the people.
Rather than stupid, I think people were ill-informed.
That's what I'm saying, though. People were ill-informed and didn't know what they were actually voting for.
Anyone used the word stupid? Because I don't think people are stupid.
No, but it's the implication. And whenever a Remainer challenges a Leaver and goes, "You didn't know what you were voting for," the implication is that there's the Leaver is not as bright. I think everybody was misinformed, Remain or Leave. And the point I was making is that having studied EU law, I didn't feel that I could make that decision. And I don't think anybody else should have been asked to make that decision. And I wondered what you thought about maybe just abandoning the whole Brexit process.
I would love that.
And I'll give you my reasoning. One of the cornerstones of the Leave campaign was to restore the supremacy of Parliament. And if Parliament is indeed supreme, which I'm, as a law undergraduate, I'm happy to accept, then because the referendum was advisory, it wasn't binding, Parliament has the power to go enough is enough.
But I think people are getting that idea mixed up with sovereignty. And this is the sort of thing that really drove me mad. The day after it happened, so many people I could see on social media were saying, "Yay, sovereign at last." That was not the case. We always were sovereign.
We were always sovereign.
Exactly.
Yes.
And all these people were like, "Yay."
The supremacy of Parliament that they were confusing with sovereignty.
And so people were getting actually, I think, quite confused about what they were voting for. And I will say both ways, because obviously there will be things that the Remain campaign were putting forward that were not necessarily the truth, it was misinformation. But I think people were getting confused between one thing and another, and I don't think they were as informed as they maybe would be if we had another one now.
I agree with what you said before about the fact that obviously people were ill-informed, and the fact that there was no precedent, the fact that no one had actually tried to leave the EU before, made it a lot harder, because obviously it's all kind of hypothetical, but had another country tried to leave the EU before and had done it successfully, what was the impact on that country? And then I feel like it would have enabled voters before the referendum.
But that's why they will not give us a deal. They will not give us a good deal, because if we manage to get out of this successfully and have an amazing deal, other countries will want to get out of this. And I don't, and this is the thing that when people were like, oh yeah, we'll get a really good deal and Britain will be amazing when we leave, they're never going to give us
and
this type
Theresa
of
May's deal. Really, let's, if I don't know how many people have actually read it, but I've read big chunks of it, it's not a bad deal, to be fair. The issue is the backstop. However, the strongest argument for a second vote is twofold. It's the shambolic lies that both the Remain and Leave campaign told during their campaigns, and the fact the politicians have made such a hash of it. They're talking about now a week of debate about trying to find out what Parliament really wants, and Parliament doesn't know what it wants. It's as split as the people are.
I think with Brexit, I supported Remain, I still would vote Remain in a referendum, but I think that ultimately, as like a world, we're stronger united than divided. But I think the biggest problem for me with leaving the European Union was purely that it's too hard to do. And you can argue to the council campaign about whether it's right or wrong, it's too hard to do, but it ultimately is too hard to do. It's too hard to reconcile the Cabinet, Parliament, the European Parliament, the EU Council, all these different bodies and organisations and people and individual figures within them, within these organisations. It's impossible to reconcile all these different opinions to get a deal that everyone's going to agree to,
at the end of the day. The good thing about yesterday is, for me, we've finally seen the ERG kicked into the curb after yesterday. Jacob Rees-Mogg and his band of, what, Merry Nutters? No, I can't say that on air, can I? Sorry, I do apologise. But his band of what are essentially elitist, wealthy investors and bankers and other such, you know, that it's not going to affect them whatever happens, you know, their money's safe. So for me, it's nice to see them kicked into touch. But tonight, obviously, we've got another vote, haven't we? We've got a vote on whether Theresa May's got to go and ask for an extension. So the other question, I thought, what do we need, a long or a short one?
An extension?
None. Yeah.
I think a long one, because, I mean, it's the 29th of March, it's the 14th today, so we should theoretically be leaving 2 weeks tomorrow.
But what? Like, I don't understand why she set the deadline.
I've got this image of England with its suitcases packed, yeah, you know, and just
moving.
I think we need a long deadline to work it out, because we...
I don't think we need any deadline.
I think they
should just be like, we will sort it out.
We need time.
Or just not have it happen.
We need time for a referendum or a general election. That's what we need time for.
I think a referendum is a better option than an election, because the way I currently would see an election going is, and I've talked about this a lot with some friends, like, to a politics degree as part of my degree, I genuinely think there'd be a hung parliament or a very slim majority, because of the fact that the country is so divided.
Nobody's going to elect Corbyn. No, this country won't elect.
Corbyn doesn't have
the... Do you know, maybe this would be the time. Okay, this is probably not, but maybe this would be the time for the Lib Dems or some other party.
The Lib Dems are toxic.
The independent
to
the Lib Dems
come
are toxic,
on up. The...
And it hurts me as a liberal.
The best chance that a centrist party have got is whatever comes out of the independent group, because they haven't necessarily got...
Yeah, but they're all just from the old guard. That's my issue with the independent group. It's not anything new. It's just a bunch of MPs that have essentially spat their dump toys out of the pram. They've not created a new party. They're just...
I think that's up to interpretation, because they are in talks about creating a new party. And you say a new party, you say spat their toys out of the pram. You know, that's...
There's a centrist party that exists.
Thing is, or alternatively, they stood up for their principles in parties that have changed and basically moved on without them, in the sense that, you know, the likes of Chuck Ramuna and Anna Sui have gone, the Tory party is too right-wing, it's too focused on doing a sort of almost hard-style Brexit, I can't be part of this because I'm a moderate centre-right person. Whereas in Labour, they've gone... Labour's a deeply anti-Semitic party, which is supposed to be open for debate. But as somebody who resigned their Labour membership over it, I can say that I am very convinced that Labour is anti-Semitic. And to be honest, Labour's not offered an alternative on Brexit.
No, but there's a perfectly good centrist party that exists already.
But and they're not a perfectly good party either, because they're so contaminated, the brand's contaminated.
Only because... We've been voting for Labour and Conservative governments for donkey's years, right? The Lib Dems made one mistake. How many mistakes did the Labour Party and the Tories make?
Hang on.
I think you're missing the point, though, because that I agree they shouldn't be, but they are. That's a hard fact of political life, that they are contaminated and they won't get elected because of that, because people see the Lib Dems as indecisive, sort of...
But when the Lib Dems were in power, they were not totally in power. They were in power with the Conservatives, and at the end of the day, the Conservatives had the overriding vote on...
Absolutely.
..an opinion on. So I don't know why the Lib Dems should not be getting all the blame for things that were done in that party.
The Conservatives played a very clever political game.
They knew what they were doing. They knew they were killing the Lib Dems.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They knew it.
It was very clever. It was long-term political strategy.
There was a documentary made
about the period. It was a coalition, and the Lib Dems
came
out of that
with
all the blame.
Yeah.
There was a documentary made about the period, wasn't there? Did you catch that?
I did, but it's the problem is, and I agree that the Lib Dems have been unfairly treated in the media and by the British public, but the fact is they've still been unfairly treated.
Well, they've been unfairly treated by students, essentially. Students that have now become adults. That's where the damage has been done.
I think it's more because... There's two aspects of the Lib Dems in government that I would look at. The Tories were very good at pinning the blame on the Lib Dems for the negative stuff, paying the credit for the positive stuff. However, the Lib Dems did show their political naivety when they were in government through the fact that, through the way they did it, in the sense that basically the way that the Lib Dems were in government was as being a deputy in every department. So, e.g., Daniel Alexander was Chief Secretary to the Treasury and George Osborne was Chancellor. What Lib Dems should have done was say, OK, we'll support you in these votes, but we're going to have education and health.
Yeah, they should have taken the lead role.
Education minister, say David.
Nick Clegg just wanted his own place in history, didn't he? You know, he's an egomaniac.
But there's a new...
Well, we had a centrist. We had Blair. We had Cameron. The centre ground was good in this country for a great number of years, and it's a shame that we're where we are now. Really,
it's also there's a lot of new leaders, I think, that have come out, like Tim Farron and that. You know, that have come out. Then it's not the same party it necessarily
Tim
was.
Tim Farron was not a great choice.
No, I know.
No,
but he was a nice man.
But he was a good liberal. He was a good liberal. Do you know what I mean?
His personal opinions
are two different things.
Well, how can they be?
When I said he was a nice man, he was a. He seemed approachable until it all came out about being a homophobe. He came across as this nice,
however,
like...
You can never separate a politician's personal values from their politics, because ultimately their personal values inform and decide their politics. At the end of the day, I think that's true of everyone.
They didn't ask a vicar's daughter what she thought about homosexuality at the time, did they? They didn't ask Theresa May, who was a vicar's daughter. They didn't ask her anything, did they? They, you know, so it was a way of...
Yeah,
getting him.
The media is right wing and horrible, but Tim Farron's still ultimate, and in the day, homophobic as well, doesn't he?
But before that came out, if that hadn't all come out, it would have potentially turned their image around. Because he seemed approachable until you found out he had very...
He wasn't the sort of person that would...
Difficult
that
views.
..that would get the people rowdy in the streets to vote, was he, really? I mean, he was in
no, but the people who get the people rowdy in the streets to vote also have the people who also are who don't want to vote. I think if you're a really big political figure, you also get the people opposing you
quite
strongly.
We've gone way off Brexit.
Yeah, we have.